Welcome to the WellPower Podcast, the ultimate biohacking roadmap, showcasing the brightest minds, research, and optimization tools across fitness, nutrition, health, and high performance, with insight and approachable methods to power your wellness. I'm your host, Kristen. Let's take it there. This is WellPower. Welcome to episode 3 of the WellPower Podcast. I'm super stoked today to bring you a good friend and like-minded fitness fanatic, Dinah Trout. When I met Dinah 3+ years ago, it was in a boot camp here in Los Angeles. And about 2 weeks into boot camp, I found out she was the co-founder of Health Aid Kombucha. And so not only was I excited because I loved the brand and so ready to nerd out because of my background and experience in the beverage industry, I was highly impressed that this woman would show up with such humility and with a smile at 6:30 in the morning and really show up with compassion and enthusiasm towards the other women in our boot camp program. She was 100% there, and yet I knew how much work and dedication and how many late nights and how many production and supply chain issues came up, and she still managed to bring her sparkle into the group and share it with us. So I brought Dinah on the podcast not only because she's an incredible entrepreneur, which many people interview her around her entrepreneurship and her leadership, and that is absolutely spot on because she was named one of the most innovative women in food and drink. And in 2019, she was named BevNet's Person of the Year. And I don't know if that means anything to you, but coming out of that industry myself, I know it is a massive honor to be crowned with that. So I wanted Dinah to come on the podcast in a slightly different way, with a bit of a different angle. I wanted her to come and share the science and the knowledge that she gained from her double degrees in nutrition and public health. I wanted her to talk about gut health, but we get to talk and hear her story and her insights on gut health to talk about how it relates to our body and our brain and our being. And we talk a bit about life and work balance and what it feels like to run a massive business as well. And I could not be more proud to have her as a friend and really to have watched the meteoric rise of a brand that is so focused on nutrition and quality production has been really incredible to watch. And it couldn't happen to a better person. It's just so lovely when we get to see someone who lives in integrity and is such a joy to be around, win and be successful at things that they set out to do in this world. And all of this is just a testament to the way that she leads her team. She's a co-founder with her husband, Justin, and her best friend, Vanessa. And they started really from a skeleton crew where they were making kombucha in the closet and selling it by hand themselves at local LA farmers markets. So this woman really knows how to grow a brand. She really understands the depth of gut health, and she's here to share it with us today. And before we dive into our time together, I just want to remind you guys that there is an incredible contest going on right now. So if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't subscribed, hit us up on Instagram at WellPower Podcast and tag a friend. Check out the contesting with a few brands that are in the mix, including winning yourself a case of Health Aid Kombucha. And you subscribe, tag a friend, tag a few brands, and get a chance to win this $500 gift pack of wonderful biohacking tools for your roadmap. So without further ado, let's get to it. Okay, great. Super excited to have you here, Dinah.
Hi.
Here in the Health Aid offices in Torrance, California.
Yes, amazing.
That's where all the magic happens. I love being in this building because I had the opportunity to check out the facilities and see what a wonderful operation you have here. And many of you guys might not know that I have a beverage background, so I love to get really nerdy about production and how beverages are made and marketed to the world. And
how that builds back into health and wellness. And this is the woman who has mastered that art. So we're going to dive in, but I wanted to talk about the very basics first, because we are in a facility making this wonderful kombucha and letting everybody know, who many of whom are drinking kombucha, just what is kombucha?
Sure. Thank you for those compliments. So kombucha, simply put, is fermented tea, and it's naturally rich in probiotics and healthy organic acids. It's been around for thousands of years in all types of cultures, and it's called all kinds of different things. But in general, it's imbibed as a drink of health to promote coarse digestion, but also immunity, energy, metabolism. And we make Health Aid here in Torrance, California. We make a very true to how you'd make it at home kombucha. And yeah, we're really proud of how we make it. It's a big part of our differentiation.
Yeah, for sure. And from the world of kombucha and your beginnings, your origin story, the farmer market played a big role in everything with you. And can you talk a little bit just about, just touching on that evolution?
If I were to use a word to describe the last 8 years, it would be the word growth. And we started really with nothing but a whole lot of hustle and drive. The three of us, so me, my husband, and my best friend started the business in 2012. We started by brewing it in our apartment closet and selling it in the farmers markets of LA. And we didn't have a lot of money to get it started. We didn't have any experience in business, really. Just a lot of drive and a really good recipe of kombucha and a dedication to making real food. And that got us through that first chapter. Fast forward to today, it's been a crazy ride, crazy roller coaster, entrepreneurial ride, where now the three of us still lead the business as operators. I'm the CEO, Justin's the COO, Vanessa's the chief of sales, and we have a team of 250 people now. We're for sale in over 30,000 stores. We're the fastest growing refrigerated brand in all of beverage. We'll sell close to 4 million cases just this year. So it's a pretty insane story. And I feel very privileged and proud to be the CEO.
I recently heard an interview of yours not too long ago where you talked about staying 10 steps ahead instead of 10,000 feet. Mm. And what really struck me about that, because you've won BevNet's Entrepreneur of the Year Award and you have all these great accolades. And so quite often you're speaking about entrepreneurship and sharing your story to empower other people. Mm. But in that interview, what struck me in that conversation, in that moment, was it's a very similar path to how we look at both the gut and our health overall, is that I think people want to have the magic pill, the magic answer. I'm going to look at what I want to feel like a year from now or down the road, what I want to look like and be like, and how quickly can I get there, as opposed to taking it step by step. Mm-hmm. So from a gut health perspective, I felt like maybe we could have a little bit of conversation around benefits of kombucha and how Sure. you really see that process of entrepreneurship as 10 steps ahead versus 10,000 feet away, and how that parallels to the health.
Wow, that's deep, Kristen.
I know, I'm getting
going. I like that, though. It is like a microcosm of life.
Yeah.
So on the entrepreneurship side, what I meant by that was, I sometimes hesitate bringing new founders into my brewery. And the reason is that I don't want them to be discouraged. I think if I stepped into this brewery at the very beginning, of course I always had a vision of having Health Aid in every fridge in America, even when we were selling it in Brentwood farmers markets and making 60 cases a week. But if I had walked into this brewery, I think I might have been discouraged, because I might have said, well, I have no idea how to build that. And there's a $12 million piece of stainless steel equipment in there that's filling something at 500 bottles a minute. Like, how would I even begin to start that? Not to mention leading 250 people with 30 freaking stakeholders on my board. And the reason I don't want to show them is because I didn't have to know how to do that then. So the point of incrementality, I think, is just that all you have to do is see 10 steps ahead of you. Or even really just a few steps ahead of you, to understand what options exist around you, and picking the best one is really all that business is. And you just do that every day, and over time and over a year, over 365 days, you'll have made a ton of decisions along the way, and each problem evolves and new problems come and those options expand. So I got here today because I always saw 10 steps ahead. I wasn't the only person that said this. There's a really awesome author of that Chicken Soup for the Soul book. And he said, you know, you can drive all the way from LA to New York with headlights, and you don't need to know everything about the road and every gas station you're going to stop at, because you will figure it out as you go. So entrepreneurship really is a disciplined and persistent act of betting on yourself, betting that you will know how to solve the problems when they come. And so the best thing you can do is actually keep yourself as on top of things, well, strong, because when you come to that moment of needing to solve a problem, you're best to be in the best shape you can. So I actually think of an entrepreneur a lot like an athlete. They got to really take care of themselves. So that's what I meant about that. You know, you don't have to see the whole staircase to know that that's where you want to go. And I think even still, if I saw the next level up, I would be very sort of discouraged. So I'm careful to say, okay, right now, what are my options? What can I do about it? I'm not going to be overwhelmed by the vision of what someone else has accomplished. As it relates to gut health, I mean, I think that lesson of incrementality, of just continuous improvement, is something that, like, no matter what we're looking at, whether it's improving your own leadership skills or improving your muscle tone or your gut health, it really doesn't matter. And it's always true. Of course, there's a vision of perfection, but I'm not sure that that's always the best expectation to have. In fact, I'm one that prescribes to a philosophy of, like, perfection is unattainable. And what's way better is to assign, I mean, it's great to have a vision and an inspiring vision, but pick a goal you can hit and one that you can see right around the corner. As it relates to gut health, you know, I think it really matters to understand where you're starting and what's a really good next step for you. So kombucha is a fermented food. So we had talked about having natural probiotics and organic acids in it. Well, let's jump into what those actually do. So tons of science exists around probiotics. Probiotics obviously are, you know, for those of you that don't know, they're friendly bacteria, yeast, enzymes that live in your gut. We should actually have more probiotics in our gut than there are stars in the Milky Way. There's actually more probiotics in our gut than there are cells in our body.
So, we are like bacteria carrying beasts. Yes, we really are. Yes. That's what we are made up of. Yeah.
Yes. So the word bacteria, I think, was incorrectly sort of stigmatized as something negative. And of course, there's the pathogens, which are disease causing or they're harmful, but most bacteria are actually friendly and we carry on a symbiotic relationship with them. So we are learning so much about the gut and probiotics, and we really are, I think, only at the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. But what we know is that nature provides us with these flora, and when we eat well and whole foods and real foods, it, like, there's this very natural and healthy exchange. So real foods that are whole have a ton of live agents in them that promote flora, as well as fermented foods. So fermented foods would be like, I mean, you can get all kinds of fermented foods now at things like farmers markets, but like nationwide at grocery stores, you can get kombucha, kimchi, sauerkraut, kefir, even yogurt. You know, real pickles now are different than the kind that just sit in vinegar. And those probiotics essentially just are going to replenish your gut with the things that it needs to keep working well.
Those things are sort of, they're upping the game of the amount and style and type of different variants of probiotics.
Yes.
That's why the fermented foods is so, they're pretty hot right now, which is really good for
yes.
you as well.
And I personally believe, like, you know, everybody's got a different theory on this, and we have theories still because the science still is not all the way there. But my personal theory is one that's similar to fruits and vegetables. You get a variety. You don't want to, like, just get your probiotics from the same kombucha every single time, just as much as you don't want to get your probiotics from a pill every single time. I think it's important to get a variety. And for that exact reason, you're going to replenish different ones. I mean, the probiotics that live in kombucha are very different than the ones that live in yogurt. So theoretically, if you get a lot, then you're going to be better off. And the thing about probiotics, too, is it goes really past digestion. I think initially we thought probiotics were really good for just a healthy gut. But now what we're learning, and it's something we're relearning, really, because Hippocrates actually said it, but the gut is really the center of a lot. And a healthy gut usually translates to every other aspect of your health being better. So most researched, immunity is a huge one. When people have a healthy flora and a healthy gut, it looks like they have a stronger immunity. So right now I've been drinking my kombucha every day.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting because anecdotally we talk about that at the office all the time, you know. People here, when we drink our kombucha, we're like, I don't know why we're not getting sick, but we think it might have something to do with this. That's obviously anecdotal. And I would love to be able to, like, do all the research required to study that. But, you know, right now it's just really probiotics that we know do that, not specifically kombucha or specifically kefir or anything like that.
Right, for sure. And there's like, I have a colleague who works in Australia, a physiotherapist, who there's like early science studies that are connecting like the gut and our musculature and how our bodies are functioning. And then they're saying, okay, let's change your gut health to see if we can make this frozen shoulder go away.
Yeah.
And alas, like anecdotally, but it's changing how people are moving and mobility and just depending on how far, in what direction everybody's gut is gone.
I mean, it's so crazy.
It's wild.
I mean, I saw an article that said your baby, if you eat probiotics or drink fermented foods or whatever, your baby cries like 7 hours less a week. I mean, really, it's like the studies are really insane. Mood, a lot of mood. I was going to say immunity and mood are the two most researched now, but now I'm seeing all kinds of things. So, you know, I think overall, I think we're going to keep learning more and more about probiotics. I think a thing I want to mention too is just about count, because I think, you know, we live in a day now where we have a lot of information, but not all of it is really whole information. So people are slapping numbers on a bottle. This has 2 billion or 50 billion, or this one doesn't have it and this one does. I've learned so much about probiotics over the years, and it's sort of similar to vitamins in that the number really is only as good as the marketer behind it. It does not translate to health necessarily. So it is really important that as we engage and interact with foods today, we really take a pulse on how does it make us feel? Because certain probiotics die off. And so at the time of bottling, it might have billions, but at the time of ingestion, it doesn't. Also, when you absorb things, certain things don't make it through the gut. So this is where I think there's still a lot of room for science to help us. And it's just definitely not there yet. You got to really check in with yourself and say, what makes me feel good and feel better? And what do I see a difference from? But overall, I'm a big believer in nature. So when nature kind of creates something for us, usually, and at least in history, when you look back, usually it provides it in the perfect proportions for exactly what you need. Like an example, vitamin C, you know, when you eat an orange, it comes with iron and fiber, two things that you need when you take vitamin C. When we had like scurvy issues back in who knows when days and they started giving people vitamin C, they didn't know yet that it needed to be combined with iron and fiber. So people were taking all this vitamin C and it wasn't helping. And it was like really confusing the scientists. So it took them a little while to realize, but the orange had it all along. So I'm a really big believer in nature in that way. I take a probiotic pill too, by the way, but I just think that getting a variety is best. And, you know, that's not all with kombucha. There's also the acids, and the acids never really get talked about, but I actually think that's the next big thing. If the last 10 years were all about probiotics, I literally think there's a decade coming up. Maybe it's not going to start this year, but in a couple of years, that talks all about the acids that come in fermentation. So acids in fermentation are being studied on an individual basis now for specific disease states. So, for example, they're looking at acetic acid and lactic acid and its impact on reproductive health, more specifically how it like, you know, might reduce cancer in women's reproductive areas. Another thing that's being studied is gluconic and glucuronic acid. These are acids that are found in fermented foods, a lot in certain kombuchas. And these are now being studied for also cancer treatments. They seem to really kill off T cells. So, again, I'm not at all claiming here that kombucha can reduce cancer, but it does have these acids. All fermented foods do. That's that sour taste. Apple cider vinegar also has that. So I think there's a lot to these acids that we're going to learn in the next couple decades, but they're certainly healthy. We know that. And they have some benefit to beyond probiotics to our health.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I would say, how kombucha is healthy. And then obviously, like from a sugar standpoint, when you compare it to something like soda, not that probably any of your listeners are drinking soda, but 80% less sugar than soda, but it's still really full flavored. So I feel like if you're looking for something that's refreshing and a little bit sweet and full flavored, it's obviously a way better option. So
yes.
From that perspective, too, I see it as as sort of an incremental improvement.
Yeah, yeah. And tenfold more healthier for you than some corn syrup-based beverage.
Yes, yes.
And we speak a little bit just on the sugar within the process, because I think that's an important thing to note, because there is this sugar in large quantities isn't great for you.
Yeah.
But their sugar is a necessary component to be able to create all the beautiful benefits of kombucha.
Yes, happy to talk about sugar. So first you should know that all kombucha is made with sugar. It has to be made with sugar. And the sugar really is for the probiotics. The yeasts eat the sugar and then they make alcohol and carbon dioxide. And then the bacteria eat the alcohol and make acids. So that's how those acids are developed. And if you have a really strong, healthy diverse flora, you're going to get all kinds of different acids that result because each bacteria makes a different type of acid. So if you got a bunch of different bacteria, you're going to get a bunch of different acids. Each acid tastes differently on the tongue. So like a really good indication that you've got a strong kombucha is that it's really smooth, well-rounded, hits you at many different parts on the tongue, has depth, kind of like a good beer or a good wine. And of course, the sugar goes down because the yeasts eat it. And it could go all the way down to zero. What you'd be drinking then is kombucha vinegar. It's just really, really hard to drink that. And eventually the bacteria will die off because once the yeasts die off, there's no food left for them. So vinegars have the benefit of the acid, but not the benefit of the probiotics because they eventually will die off. So the sugar actually is more for the probiotics than for you. And then also I would say the sugar does allow the beverage to be drinkable because if you were to drink straight vinegar, you could take a shot of it, but that's about it. And you're not going to get the same amount of acids. And then we talked about the probiotics too. So yeah, I mean, we don't add any sugar for flavor beyond that. And what's really interesting about fermentation is in an effort to try to reduce the sugar as much as possible, we've done a ton of R&D on like, well, let's just bring the sugar down 10%. Let's see what happens. It like won't ferment.
Right.
So what's crazy is like the yeast need a certain amount of sugar around them to do their thing. I think as we get more sophisticated in understanding fermentation, we will probably be able, like I see a future where we're going to be able to maneuver that sugar number around more without compromising the quality of the liquid because the residual sugar that's there, theoretically, you just have to have enough to keep the probiotics alive. And then beyond that, could we remove the rest? In the future, we probably could, but if you're making a wild, real fermentation, that's pretty impossible to do. It's part of it. So I think what's important is to remember how much it actually has. So you can just include it as a part of your entire diet. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the same as an apple.
And the body uses glucose. I mean, that's the truth too, right? The more bioavailable you take it in, your muscles get working out, getting on the bike in the morning, all of the things that you do, your body will use that glucose. And it's something that the muscles really love to have. But sugar is, while it can be villainized, there are pieces of it, of the glucose component that are really helpful to the body. So that's,
sure. And I mean, that's probably why kombucha feels so good at the 3 o'clock slump, you know, when you're like between lunch and dinner and you're like, gosh, I need to get through. And you're really craving a coffee. For me, this is awesome. And I think it's just about what makes you feel good and you know, recognizing that like, yeah. I mean, my philosophy is that you keep the sugar where it belongs. Just don't eat too much of it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And as someone who drinks a ton of water, and I do the same, it's really nice, whether it's around midday, that 3 o'clock hour, what have you, to have something that has a little bit more of a flavor component. Because quite often when I'm feeling a little snacky or feeling like I have a craving for something, it really just, it takes the edge off. It's nice. It's still a liquid. I can keep working. It doesn't weigh me down at all. And then I feel like I'm getting benefits. And so it's sort of like that nice.
Yeah.
It's a perfect thing to remind people of is like midday.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's refreshing. And we have to remember that life is also about enjoyment and like, I don't know, if you get real joy out of it, you get real joy out of a treat. Like you can look at it as a treat if you want, but it also makes you feel good about it. It's not like a dead treat. Yeah. So that's how I view it anyway. I like love when I open my kombucha, it's a whole like, oh, look, I have this special thing right now. And it makes me feel good on the inside and outside. Yeah.
And it's a ritual. It's sort of nice to pop the bottle open.
Yeah, exactly.
Dinah had to open the bottle for me because I'm just, I don't know, I wasn't strong enough today. I was so excited to be here.
I'm super strong.
And she's super strong.
I think that's an anecdotal effect of kombucha. But also, you know, you think about like wine and beer and those have way more sugars. And don't get me wrong, I like my alcohol, but we had talked in the beginning about entrepreneurship and how I really view it is like, I view myself as an athlete in a lot of ways and I have to take care of myself. One of the biggest things I do is avoid alcohol during the week. And it's one of the most important things. And, you know, I still want to partake. Like everybody around me at a social event is having wine and beer. It just isn't as fun to have water or even sparkling water. So that's when I usually put kombucha on ice and I feel like I'm zero missing out.
Yeah, it's like a low ABV vibe to it or something.
Yeah.
Like a low alcohol cocktail.
Yeah, it's like full, like, it just gives you that full flavor. It's not the same as sparkling water. Yeah.
And you can like put it in a champagne glass even and just be really fancy.
Oh, I do that.
Fancy
100%. I put it in a wine glass. Try it.
So that makes a good veering off to sort of the alcohol component.
Sure.
So let's chat
let's talk about
that because I think it comes up a lot. I think that there's like some confusion in the marketplace. And
it is confusing. Yeah. So here's the lowdown on that. So we talked about fermentation, the process. So as a reminder, yeast eat sugar and they make CO2 and alcohol. And then the bacteria eat the alcohol and make the acid. So kombucha is actually very fundamentally different than beer in that way, because beer tries to avoid bacteria at all costs. So their yeasts do make alcohol, but then there's no bacteria to eat the alcohol. So the alcohol just goes up. So in kombucha, you could say the alcohol is self-limiting. It will never be 5% ABV unless you're trying to enhance that yeast component. And a lot of kombucha beers are doing that now, which is kind of fun. They're adding more malt, barley, hops, more yeast to bacteria ratio so that it's going to make more alcohol in the end. But real kind of standard old school kombucha is not going to have enough alcohol to be changing your alcohol levels or
totally.
Anything like
in a
that.
Store that's selling kombucha that's meant to be drunk every day, that's very, very, very minimal amount of alcohol is a very different potentially type of store that's selling like cocktails, beer, wine, et cetera. So
yeah.
It's not like there's any confusion on the shelves. In
yeah,
that regard.
Right. The ones that are alcoholic will say hard kombucha.
Yeah.
And just know that they're altering that process in some way to make the alcohol higher. It's not like they just let it go naturally or
right.
something like that. So, yeah. But still, there's confusion in the non-alcoholic space. I mean, the rule is that under 0.5% is non-alcoholic. So everybody that's selling under non-alcoholic premise should be under 0.5%. But you know, there's a lot of challenges with kombucha. First of all, it's a really small amount. 0.5%. So to study and get a test that will accurately, precisely tell you what is 0.4% versus 0.6%, it's like NASA level, and your typical lab doesn't do that. So if you've seen a lot of lawsuits out there around kombucha and alcohol, if you looked into the details, you might find that we're talking about splitting hairs with the amounts, and that a lot of times these end up getting dismissed in court because the lab didn't follow the protocol properly, and so it could have altered the effectiveness of the 0.6 versus 0.5, you know, one being alcohol, one being not. While that gets all worked out, and by the way, the kombucha category as a whole is trying to change the law on that because fermented foods all have alcohol.
I was going to say, yeah.
And really what we're trying to avoid here is an amount of alcohol that would be mind-altering or at least create some kind of a bottleneck or something like that in your liver. Like the line 0.5% was just picked. So why? Why do we
like
care about that?
Post-prohibition, they were like, how about 0.5?
Yes, right. Something they couldn't even really measure, which is crazy.
Right.
So, you know, in other countries, like 1% is the law. And if that were the case, kombucha would have no problems with alcohol. So what you should know about alcohol is that for the most part, they're under 0.5%. If not, they're really close. So I wouldn't be worried about that. And the amount of alcohol in it is so little. It's as much as soy sauce, ketchup, Dijon mustard, Red Bull. Apple juice if you leave it on the counter for an hour. Bananas
for
if you leave it on the counter for an hour. So it's really like, I think that's a bit of a hype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if anything, I recommend it for people who are trying to avoid alcohol because it, to me, gives you that sort of flavor of fermented, which I think it does satiate us in some way. It's like, I love sparkling water. Don't get me wrong. I drink one a day for sure, like a flavored sparkling water. I love my Spindrift, but it doesn't like satiate something.
Right.
I still
but, like,
want a glass
you.
Of wine after. And the only thing that satiates that is kombucha. So
cool. When we talk about kombuchas not all being created equal, it kind of harkens back to the beginning of this conversation where I got a chance to check out your facility. And I love that you guys are fermenting in glass. And we're sitting in a brewery in a beautiful office. And the reality is that brands have to market in order to find consumers that are good matches for them. But there's a world of kombucha out there. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about how they're not all created equal. And if somebody wants to shop well and know what they're looking for, what they mm-hmm. should be looking for.
Yeah.
Besides health aid, of course.
Yeah, that's really hard. How do you know what to look for? Because the labels really are only a snapshot. So what I'll tell you about labels overall is that companies who are doing it the right way or the real way, they're trying to tell you. They're going to be trying to tell you because it's usually a pain in the ass to do it the right way. So all you have to do is look a little bit into the company and the brand, and you will likely see quite quickly what brands are doing and if it aligns with your overall values for food. So at Health Aid, and as it relates to kombucha, you know, we pride ourselves on making it the highest quality way you can buy it. And we think it makes us the best tasting also. It always works out when those two are aligned. So yeah, we ferment in 2.5 gallon glass jars. We've got about 250,000 of them. We engage in real fermentation. We flavor with cold pressed juice that we press here. We buy direct from the farms that produce. So Right now, Kristen's drinking a mint limeade that just literally has squeezed lime, mint, and a dash of vanilla. I'm drinking Grape Vibes that has cold-pressed organic California grapes in it, and that's it. Added to the kombucha, of course. So yeah, we pride ourselves on how we make it. But more importantly, it's the outcome. The liquid actually is what differentiates us. So we talked about taste. I think from a flavor standpoint, the kombuchas can vary a lot. And like I said, the way we make it impacts the flavor. So we're lucky in that way because the higher the quality you make it, the higher the quality of the flavor, I think. So you can taste the difference, I would say, with Health Aid. But even if you look deeper into the liquid, we've tested our probiotic count versus the others, and we're more consistent because we don't need to supplement. We have really a variety of acids, which is a testament to the flora to begin with, and overall higher of the more sort of known to be health-oriented acids like gluconic and glucuronic acids. So when you look at the different kombuchas analytically, there's a difference with Health Aid.
And do you find other brands using glass fermentation in the small batch style that you do?
No, I'm pretty sure we're the only ones that do glass, although I will just make one note. You know, we started using glass because when we were making this in our closet, we needed to be able to carry this by hand. So big stainless steel tanks weren't going to work. And the options were basically plastic or glass. So we picked glass because plastic, while also bad for the environment, the real reason we picked it was because of leaching. So the acids that develop in kombucha are really strong. In fact, the kombucha pH is under 3, which is like lemon juice. And so it will leach from its surroundings. And we really didn't want to use plastic for that reason because we think you'd be drinking that. And we even tested in 50-gallon stainless steel tanks when we had a bigger brewery, and that leached too. So we were like, no way, we're glass all the way. So we really adapted our brewery to basically support this all-glass process. Now, what we've learned is that there are stainless steel options that are resistant to leaching with high acids. So it's like pharmaceutical-grade stainless steel. It's like another level, which wasn't available to us at the farmers markets. It's like, you know, crazy expensive. But there definitely are breweries and kombucha breweries that are doing it right just in stainless steel. So I wouldn't say that like glass is the only way that works, although that's how we do it. I think the more important thing you should know is that more than 70% of the kombucha on the shelf is made in plastic, and then they bottle it in glass. So it's really confusing to the consumer, and that's why you really have to look to see how is this company like marketing to me.
Yeah.
More specifically.
And it's part of the reason that I wanted to talk to you specifically about this category, because I've seen sort of the glorious glass downstairs.
Yeah.
And also people who are listening to this know it's like when I'm talking about CBD or any brands that I'm working with or using in my life, I'm the girl who writes info at and says, are you pressing your CBD with alcohol? Are you just cold press? You know, I'm trying to get the skinny on it, because how you make it also affects the bioavailability of how we can get the nutrition in us, how we can get the juiciest, best health benefits of it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And people who are doing it the hard way, like they want to show you. So I would be very sort of apprehensive, or like, you should definitely question it if somebody doesn't want to show you how they're making it. And they say something like, oh, for proprietary reasons. To me, that doesn't really hold true. I've showed everybody in my brewery. You can come in and see it. We show pictures. Nobody's tried to copy it. Not yet.
There's a jar downstairs in the lobby when you walk in.
Yes.
To show you. Look,
yes.
Look at this is how we do it.
Yeah.
Let's jump quickly to the SCOBY, because maybe some people are out there trying it on their own and they're trying to figure it out. And then also people who are first trying kombucha are like, hey, this bottle is awesome, but is this okay? There's something in the bottom. You know,
yeah.
So just talk about the SCOBY, sort of what it means, stands for, and how it all makes the magic.
Yeah. So SCOBY stands for Symbiotic Culture of Bacteria and Yeasts. It's a fancy word for the home of the probiotics. But actually, that's not really entirely true. As we've learned about kombucha, we've learned a lot about the SCOBY. So here's the skinny on the SCOBY. First, it's an ingredient when you make kombucha at home. So you need tea, sugar, and water to make kombucha, but you also need those probiotics. So where do you get them from? A SCOBY is that home. It's basically a cellulose mixture. It's like kind of looks like a pancake, and it's got the consistency of tofu. And the actual mass itself is useless. It's just cellulose. But what's within it is what matters, and that's where the bacteria and yeast live. So as soon as you put the SCOBY on top of the sweet tea, that's when the magic happens. So the SCOBY is responsible for transforming tea to kombucha. It is the most important part of kombucha. But again, the mass itself doesn't matter. It's the probiotics. So you could theoretically sprinkle in probiotics and it would make kombucha without a SCOBY. Yeah.
And I've heard it called the mother.
And it can be called a mother. Now, yeah, so let's get to that in a second. But the reason you wouldn't want to sprinkle in probiotics is you're sort of playing God at that point. Like, you would have to know which probiotics to sprinkle in and which amounts. So unless you were trying to mimic what's in a SCOBY, you're probably going to get it wrong. And so the end result might be super vinegary because it made one type of acid over another. So to get a really well-rounded kombucha, you really have to follow what nature gave you, because it's hard to repeat and replicate. So what happens in normal at-home kombucha, and same with here, is you put the SCOBY in, it ferments, that liquid changes like we talked about, the sugar goes down, the acids go up, and then the SCOBY makes a baby. That's why it's called a mother.
Oh.
So the SCOBY actually doubles, and that's because the probiotics double or triple, and they make more of a home for themselves, basically. So it's not really that they're like, that the SCOBY itself is replicating. It's that the bacteria need to, they make this sort of cellulose structure as a byproduct that they then live in. So you get two from where you had one. And then from that point, you can make two kombuchas because each of those can make a batch. And then you can make four and then 16. So if you were to go downstairs in our brewery right now where you'd see 250,000 jars, I mean, it's like a Matrix scene. They all came from one SCOBY.
So amazing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool.
But again, you can actually like take the SCOBY out of kombucha. The most important part is the flora, is the bacteria and yeast.
Yeah.
In the right proportions.
Yeah.
And that actually is also what differentiates each kombucha. Like when you look at the flavors, the differentiated flavors, it's because of the starting culture.
Right. It's like you're adding to what the baseline is for all the products.
Yeah. And that's the same for yogurts too. Like if you taste different yogurts and some taste better, more sophisticated, more elevated than others, it's because of that. It's because of the bacteria and yeast they're using to ferment.
Just changing the profile based on what bacteria and yeast. Cool.
By the way, it's like really complicated too. We haven't even talked about the tea. The tea matters too.
Because the varietal of tea.
The varietal,
it's coming
from the
specific
amount.
Leaf and
bacteria. I mean, how much black do you use versus green? What type of black versus green? I mean, all of it matters. When you ferment kombucha, we say it's fermented tea. What does that actually mean? Well, you ferment the sugars, but you also ferment the actual tea. The tea fermentation creates byproducts like gallic acid and gluconic acid. So what blend of tea you use impacts the flavor too. It's like, it's really hard to recreate Health Aid unless you knew exactly what our culture was in our SCOBY, exactly what our tea blend was. Sugar probably would be the same, but like it's really almost impossible. It really is like your own recipe.
Yeah. And the tea is going to add a bit of, there's also science around tea and the benefits tea brings.
Especially when you ferment it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Shifting over to biohacking.
Okay.
Because we talk about biohacking here a bit.
Love it.
And I know that you and I, because we go back a couple years now, and I had the good fortune of meeting Dinah in a boot camp, a fitness boot camp, and getting to know the brand and coming out of my beverage background, writing her a nerdy email within the first week or so of meeting her, just being like, I'm so excited for you. What you're bringing to the world is amazing. The fitness component of both of our lives is very strong.
Oh God, I'm not on your level, Kristen. Not even close. It's there for me.
It's definitely there. And I think that you bring some key philosophies and great ideas or biohacks or biohacking just simply, like I always talk about, just finding ways to change your environment inside and out of you so that you can actually perform better, have more energy, and just create longevity and like a happy life, right? And it comes right down to it. So I just want you to tell us about a few things that you do that you might consider some biohacks. For those of you guys who may not know, Dinah has two kids at home. She's got a whole big business, right? Her husband's involved in the business. It's a complete, massive animal to manage. And, you know, it's like busy lives on every level. It's maybe you want to talk about the bucket theory a little bit or just, you know, what elements of, from a biohacking perspective, from a life perspective, what elements do you try to make sure you add into every day that are going to bolster your wellness over the long haul so that you feel ready next time you got to get the next 250,000 jars to go?
Yeah. So it's changed a lot since starting Health Aid and having kids. I'll just say that. So it becomes, obviously people know what the word busy means, but I have to just stress that the amount of sort of pressure and the time constraint I have in my life, it's really abnormal and unnatural, especially when you add the two kids in there. So obviously it becomes really hard to do things like get a massage, work out, do anything for yourself, really. So you really have to prioritize and also manage your expectations. So I am not at the level that I was even when I did boot camp when I only had one kid, because it was more doable then. So you really have to kind of manage, where are you today? And this is a little bit like where we started, full circle. Like, you have to first figure out where you are and appropriate goal for yourself there. So right now in my life, like, while I would love to be doing the boot camp that I know you co-lead, I just know I can't do that right now because my life has just got too many priorities. So instead, some of the hacks that have really worked for me are, you know, just accepting that working out has to happen before the children wake up. So if they wake up at 6, I've got to be done at 6, which usually means I'm starting at around 5. And that's really freaking early. Yeah. So, you know, you can't be going to bed at 11 and waking up at 5. You're going to be tired all the time. So that means you have to prioritize going to bed earlier. Like, that's what it is. And I just set a goal that's realistic for me. So for me, doing that 3 times in a week, that's like a win. And then I get it done both days on the weekend because I have more time then. So I feel really good if I'm getting 5 days a week. And usually I'm hitting that because it's a manageable expectation. Sometimes if we pick a goal I think that's too high or too extreme, it can sometimes work, at least for my personality, it can work against me. Like, I'll just give up entirely if I'm not close enough.
Yeah.
So it's got to be like manageable. So yeah, and then the other thing is not leaving the house is a key component because the kids are asleep. I got to be in the house. And at-home workouts can be challenging, yeah, because you got to be like super self-motivated at 5 in the morning. I really like the Peloton for that reason, and I do some sort of online classes too, but really I would say nothing beats the workout I can get with the Peloton, and it's pretty much because I have a class in my garage.
Right.
I also like it because even if I only have 20 minutes, I can get a good workout in. I know 20 minutes isn't a lot, but it's better than nothing, for sure.
And people are speaking about microdosing fitness and finding ways to get, if they only can get 20 minutes in the morning, then maybe they have a 5-minute break in between board meetings and they're like doing
jumping jacks.
Yeah, jacks, or they're just doing, you know, tricep push-ups off the desk or something, you know, just to get a little bit of, it's still building into your overall wellness routine. And mm-hmm. it's no different than if you added little 5-minute increments, you'd get to that 45 minutes or whatever you really would like to have in the morning if you couldn't get it that day.
Yeah, I really love that. I think for me, I have become healthier as I've gotten older. And what's funny is I'm actually getting busier. So it usually shouldn't work like that. But it's because I'm prioritizing it. And just like anything else, it will suffer. It will flail. It will fail if you don't carve out the time. So it just,
you mean like scheduling it, you have to really schedule it.
You have to carve it out. You can't be like, I'm gonna work out today. I mean, probably all your listeners already, if they're following you, they're probably on board with this. But so many people I meet are like, oh, I'm trying to work out. And it's like, really? What do you mean you're trying? Like, have you carved out the time? Because it's as simple as setting your alarm at 5 in the morning. That's what it is. And going to bed an hour earlier. Now, I'm not saying that's easy to do. And there's all kinds of psychology there. But it is simple. It is simple.
Yeah. People say, I'm going to work out. I'm trying to work out. And I always think, you keep using that word, but I don't think you know what it means.
Yes.
Like, if you're going to do it, you need to put it in your schedule and do it.
You have to put it in your schedule.
Yeah. It's definitely not easy, but don't you find that it really contributes to how you perform every day over the long haul and how you manage? Managing stress is a thing for you.
Oh,
for real. And
oh, yeah.
So do you feel like it?
Oh, God. I mean, when people ask me, what are the two most like important things that you do? Because the decisions I make are super complicated. They're high pressure. There's a lot of impact and they're never easy. They're never easy. It's like a lose-lose, it feels like, no matter what decision I'm making. Or there's so much betting I'm making on one thing or another. So I really have to like tap into my gut and say, what is the best decision I can make right now? So I feel like I have to be so clean in my mind, so strong and committed, just all the things, like really athletic, almost like at the top of my performance to be able to make those decisions well. And the two things that I think impact that the best, well, there's so many, but it's all the things. It's sleeping enough. Like, I have to sleep 8 hours. If I'm like not sleeping enough, it really over time affects that ability to make good decisions. It's working out is absolutely at the top. And avoiding the alcohol during the week, like even just one glass of wine the day before I go to work, like I'm just 5% worse at making decisions the next day. So I like let myself have alcohol on the weekends, but during the week I'm like kind of really insane about it. Regimented. And yeah, I mean, of course diet plays a part. So does drinking water. But I think that like the three most important for me are sleep, working out, and avoiding of alcohol.
It gives you a nice celebration on the weekend to kind of be like, hey, I can have a drink. This is great. And it's like, you know, I always find when I keep something away from me, then it's like actually even better the moment that I get to have
totally. Totally. And then you can enjoy it. You know, it's not a stress reliever. It's more a supplement to your weekend. But anyway, yeah, so no, hugely important. I think the first step is recognizing where you are in your life and trying not to expect too much of yourself, considering things. If you've got young kids, it's really hard to find a 2-hour workout class that you're going to be able to do every day. That's just hard. So stop trying to like think that you're going to fit that in. But by the way, it doesn't just stop at like workouts and stuff. You have to define what makes you happy. And this is a little bit into the bucket theory, but you know, being a good CEO is not the only thing that's important to me. That's not my only identity, even though it can feel like that sometimes because I have this business with all these employees and responsibilities and it takes up so much of my time. So any entrepreneur out there might be struggling with their identity outside of their business. It's a really important journey you're on because the goal has to be that you're more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you figure that out, you're like, well, what else am I? Okay, well, I don't know what you are, but I am also a good mom. And I'm also a really good wife. And I'm a good friend. And I'm a good sister, good daughter. And to be good at all those things, I have to be my joyous self. I have to be myself. So what does it take for me to be my happy self? Well, I have to work out. I got to eat right. I got to feel like I look good. I got to do things that I enjoy. Okay, so now I'm talking about a whole lot of things I have to fit into my calendar. So we talk about work-life balance. That becomes really difficult to shove into one day. You'll fucking go crazy trying to do that, and you will fail because it's too many things. So this, again, goes back to the managing your expectations. But basically, the way I look at it is I give myself a month to be good at all those things, and I make sure I carve in the time. Oh, I really need to get a massage. I hear that all the time. Well, when's it happening? You just have to look. You say, okay, in the next 30 days, I'm looking at my calendar right now. When am I going to schedule in that massage? How am I going to handle that? It can't be this like last minute, oh my gosh, I got to do it. Or same thing with husband-wife relationships, especially when you have kids, those usually suffer. And obviously they do because there's a huge shift. You know, you just have to commit to something and carve it in. And again, it's not easy, but it is simple. I don't know why we struggle with it. It's weird. Like Justin and I struggled with it. You know, we see each other all the time at the business, but kind of recognize that didn't necessarily make our relationship strong. And this year we said, okay, what is the goal? Twice a month, date night, 1 week this year, just the two of us on a vacation somewhere. That's it. Once we committed to that goal, I was like, all right, so what do we need? We need a babysitter. Great. So we got a babysitter. I call around. I find the person who can do twice a month for the whole year. We lock in the dates for the whole year and it's done. It's totally done now. I don't even know. I can't believe it was so difficult.
And then who plans? You plan, he plan, you
whatever.
Alternate. Who cares? Don't make
matter.
It hard. Make it simple.
But we do. Yeah. I'm like, you take March, I'll take April. But it almost doesn't matter if someone didn't figure out what we're going to do because it's not the point really at this stage of our marriage isn't like what we do on our date night because, you know, you've been to restaurants before or whatever. It's more just that you have the time away from the kids and you're going out and you're not talking about work. But what's crazy to me is like how easy it was once we got over the psychology of like, oh, it's just sort of lingering as this getting things done thing you have to do. But until it's in your calendar, it's not getting done. So it doesn't matter what it is you're devoting yourself to. It just has to be on your calendar. I just feel like otherwise we really struggle as a human race.
Yeah.
We make things way too complicated. And I'm part of that. And once you kind of recognize what's important for you to be happy, that you just make sure that's in your calendar for the month. You know, you might not get a massage every week, but maybe you're somebody that needs that. I don't know. But you just get it in. Once you start getting everything into motion, oh, my calendar is already adjusted for 3 o'clock me leaving at work today because at 4 o'clock I'm doing X.
You just, and you can like, say no to the things that you need to put in another portal without the guilt. That's the thing that I feel a lot. It's like, oh, I'm booked that time. I don't think you even have to say I'm going home to see my children that hour.
No,
I'm booked. Let's do Thursday instead.
100%. You don't tell them what you're doing. And then also, you bring up a good point, though, of taking things off the plate. Like, once you identify the things that are critical for your happiness, and like, it's not a to-do list, it's a to-be list. Like, I want to be a good mom. To be a good mom, I have to whatever. I think once you do that, what you start to find is there's a lot of things on your plate that you're like, this isn't that important to me, yet I'm devoting a whole Saturday to it. or, you know, hanging out with people that, like, they just happen to be on the calendar because they're good at, like, reaching out and setting up play date or something. But, like, you have other friends you'd rather see or other things you'd rather do. So really understanding and being careful with your time and being, like, kind and compassionate, but really only carving out what drives your happiness. That's it. So it means things come off the plate. It's a constant practice too, by the way. Like, I just realized, so part of being a good mom is your kid goes to school. You got to, like, support the school, right? You got to, like, show up and do the thing, donate,
PTA or whatever.
Whatever, right? And it's really hard when you're a busy mom too, because, like, how are you going to paint the school 2 o'clock on a Tuesday? Like, come on, people, right? So you have to find ways you can commit. And I really recognize what I, because I constantly do this process of, like, what is driving my happiness at the things I care about. And what I recognized was that as it related to me supporting the school, what really mattered to me was that Hendrix, my 4-year-old son, knew I was doing it. Like, it's for him I'm doing this, not for the sake of the school, so to speak. I mean, I want the school to benefit too, but it's Hendrix I want to know that I'm a dedicated and devoted mom. Yet all the stuff I was doing for the school was all behind his back. Like, he had no idea that I was helping drive the fundraiser or whatever like that. So I switched my efforts, same amount of time, to be, you know, the one who brought snacks, that together we could pick the snacks out and la la la, or pick out the flowers. Same amount of time, same amount of money commitment. But I did it in a way that was a little bit more purposeful. And, like, my happiness level has, like, tripled in that department, I guess you could say.
Well, and time spent together, yeah, and interaction with your son. And
yeah. So it's a constant journey of, like, improving and continuous improvement on that. But the more in tune we are with what makes us happy, and then the more purposeful we are with our time, making sure those align and continuously improving on that, I just feel like overall that's where happy people are.
Yeah, they're in the process.
They're in that process, and it's a constant re-engaging, you know, checking in, where, how am I doing? Yeah.
Well, that's you bringing us your willpower for sure. The one last quick thing I like to end with is I always want to ask, what would you say to your 10-year-old self if you could look back and give them just a small piece of advice that maybe you've incorporated to your life today, or maybe you felt like you needed more of when you were on the path to where you are now?
I'd be like, go check out entrepreneurship. No, what I would really say to her is, you are exactly who you need to be. You are exactly who you need to be. I think when I was 10, I really felt that I had to be so many other things, and I really wanted to impress others. And I didn't yet know that all those personality traits that were coming out of me, like, naturally, were exactly what were necessary to build a business. And I didn't quite realize it until I built a business. And I look back and I say, hey, you know that thing I used to hate about myself? Or I would love for her to embrace her strengths and not try to change them so they fit some kind of mold.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending this time with me. I know how busy you are. And I encourage anyone who's listening to come and check out the facility. And even if you're just at Trader Joe's or at the grocery and you're seeing Health Aid, there's a ton of new flavors. This mint limeade is amazing. I'm a big fan of jalapeno kiwi cucumber. And it's also really nice of the night to substitute in for your alcoholic beverage when you're out with your friends, so that you feel like you can be social and have something tasty and just have a great night.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, Kristen. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Yes. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Wellpower Podcast. Please subscribe and follow us on social at Wellpower Podcast or Warrior Woman Mode. And if you're really digging what we're throwing down, would you head on over and leave a 5-star review? It helps others find us, lets us know you're out there, and from time to time I'll be reading the wildest, most wonderful reviews on air. Any foul language you hear on this podcast is not approved by my mother. And as always, I'm your host, Kristen. Be well.